international finance law. We can look at past papers to try to understand how we can prepare and answer questions and produce very high quality answers. This is the paper from last year. Let's just look through the main points which arise. What you will see is basically it's 4,500 words limit, 1,500 words per question. There will be six questions, you answer three. Strictly speaking, it's 1,500 per question, although you can allocate additional amounts to specific questions. I wouldn't recommend that because it then limits the mark that you could get on the question which has got the shorter answer. So it's three questions, 4,500 words in total. I would try to answer 1,500 words per question. In practice, you will write 300 words per page when you're typing. Therefore, it's roughly 5 pages per answer. You'll see here the submission was, this says 3 hours. In practice, you should have at least 4 hours. You'll be given a reading period at the beginning, usually 30 minutes, and then another 30 minutes submission period at the end as well. So it's an online exam. It should be 4 hours, but you can check that. What we will do is this. You review the questions very quickly to see which questions you like and which order you want to answer them in. So you'll answer them, you'll look very quickly over the paper, get a feel for the size of the questions, which ones are longer, which ones are shorter. You'll then see which of the key subjects covered, and then you'll decide which questions I'm going to answer, and then in which order I'm going to answer them. For the purposes of my examinations, generally, almost always, the questions will follow the order in the syllabus and the timetables. Therefore, it's chronologically the same as the intellectual order of the subject. So you do not need to sort of move around or jump around. I personally would start with the earliest question first, whether it's 1, 2, or 3, because I'm going to build in introductory background material into that question, so I want that near the beginning of the course. So I'm going to answer the first numeric number, I'll do that one first, and I will usually go through them in order, because that simply means that I can build in the maximum amount of answer, the maximum amount of information with the least cross-reference between the different answers. Some students like to jump between the questions and move them around in different orders. You can do that if you like. I personally would always begin with the earliest question first, which is nearest the beginning of the exam, because I'm going to build in some general background information at the beginning anyway, because so long as it's relevant, I'm going to get credit for it in the assessment process. And what I'm trying to do is make sure I make as much use available of all of the space and time that I've got. So I'm going to try and build up my answers in so far as I can. I may find that I can answer a lot of these questions, certainly the shorter questions, possibly in 2 or 3 pages. But what I'm still going to do is build up, pump up the rest of my answers to make full use of that 5 pages that I have got. Let's just look at some of these questions. A young specialist technology firm in London is developing a new artificial intelligence processing system. It's looking to expand its research facilities and construct a connected manufacturing plant on an adjacent site to build new generation robots, GenBots. It wishes initially to raise £60 million and then a further £40 million, that's £100 million. It's advised it can either use the banking markets or the capital markets. You're asked to advise on the different options available and the relative advantages and disadvantages of each. So this is basically, is it a banking capital market question? So on the slides that I provided, on the loan slides, there's some summaries of the differences between loans and bonds. You can look at that first, build out the basic points. That's your introductory part to the answer. I have dealt with that separately in the presentations. We go through the slides and we go through all of the key points. All of the core information is made available on the system. What you will see is this. There's a basic table. It outlines the key differences between the loans and the bonds. You can work through those. There's then additional slides which examine this in further detail, pulling out more of the specific points which summarize the differences between loans and bonds. And then another slide, two slides, which summarize the actual content and nature and structure and operation of the bond itself. So what you can do is this. You can build up your answer in different layers, different stages, to try and incorporate as much information as you can around this. What I would also simply do is this. I'm going to immediately try and work out how much space do I need to answer this specific question. Let's say I could do all of that in 3 or 4 pages. So I've still got a page left. Because it's my first question, I'm going to provide background information on the markets themselves. So I'm going to go back to the beginning. What are the international finance markets? What are the main markets? What's the structure of them? I will probably also have a short historical paragraph on the background to the Eurodollar markets, because this is what we're concerned with. To explain the Eurodollar markets, I need to explain the origins, nature and development of the Eurodollar markets. Just to demonstrate and just to show off how much I've learned, I'm also going to refer to coffee shops, coffee houses, and build in some historical references. I do not need to waste a large amount of space, but a couple of sentences and a couple of endnotes can get a lot of extra credit by really building up a highly intelligent, articulate answer. I'm going to summarize all of the main markets, all of the main facilities, and then I will focus on specifically the loan markets and the bond markets. I'll explain the nature of the euro loan system, the euro syndicated lending system, and then I'll go into the bond system. So I'm going to provide all this background information before I even go into the actual question set. I will then build in these slides I've mentioned. There's one core slide. There's then two other sets of 2 slides each, which expand all of this detail, and I've provided additional written material information which supports all of that, so I can build up a larger, more developed answer. Now, the key point to this simply is that if you can use the capital markets, you can always borrow more at a finer rate, at a finer coupon. It's always cheaper, so you can borrow more cheaper in the capital markets if you have good standing, if you have good credit. If you haven't got good credit, or the project is complicated or unusual, or there's any other specific special issues, then you'll go back to the banking markets. But the general answer always is, if we can use the capital markets, we'll use the capital markets. Because of the transferability and negotiability that the use of securities-based funding instruments allows, whether it's bonds, notes, or commercial paper, you'll always have additional liquidity in those markets, so you can borrow more cheaper, if you can. If there's any complications, however, then you go back to the banking markets, the credit markets. And that's a good, strong, intelligent answer. Question 2, outline the main sets of financial obligation and default provisions contained in a typical term loan or syndicated loan agreement. So basically, this is just looking at the 3 core sets of provisions in any finance document. And this is the key thing to stress. All finance is based on these 3 things. You'll have the financials, you'll have the obligations, and you'll have the defaults. So I then need to explain this. If I've already dealt with the background to the markets, I don't need to do that. If I was starting on question 2, I would build in a lot of the material I've referred to already. I'm then going to focus on each one of those. So the financials I can probably deal with in maybe a page. The obligations I might want 2-3 pages, and the defaults I'll deal with in a page as well. And I'm just going to try and build in and explain as much information as I can. In these types of examinations, that question could have just raised on one of those. It could have focused on the financials or the obligations or the defaults. In this case, it's actually asking for all of them. So that's quite a lot of information I've got to provide. So again, I'm going to need to plan this. I'm going to need to have this pre-prepared so that I can compress as much information, as much discussion, as much detail as I can in the space available. As I've said, very often this question could just have dealt with not just obligation, but possibly even just the CPs or the CUVs or the representations and Ws. In this case, it's asking for all of them. If it had been the other way around, and if, for example, the question was only on the default provisions or obligations or specific obligations like the reps and Ws, to answer that question, I'm still going to have to build in all the other stuff anyway. I'm still going to have to explain there's 3 core sets of provisions with the financials, the obligations and the defaults, and then the obligations are going to include the CPs, the reps and Ws and the CUVs. Do you see? So even if it focused on the specific bit, I'm still going to build all of that other stuff around it. Except in that case, the emphasis will then be on the specific area question asked, but I'll also build all of that else around my examination, all of that around my answer so I can build this response up to a full 5 pages. Question 3. An established battery manufacturing company in the UK is looking to expand its existing manufacturing facilities to allow it to produce high-capacity electric batteries for electric vehicles produced by other companies in the UK and abroad. The company has good credit standing and is considering raising funds on the capital markets. Explain the different options that may be available, including with regard to raising funds on a fixed or floating basis and with different durations or maturities, and outline the principal documentation that would be required. So again, what you're looking for are the buzzwords. So it says credit standing, you think immediately, I can go capital markets. It's then asking for different options. In this case, it's actually made the answer quite easy for you because it's distinguishing between fixed and floating and then between different durations. So what the question is basically inviting you to do is to discuss capital market lending. So it's the bond market, it's the note market, it's the commercial paper market, and explain all of this. So again, if I've already dealt with the background to the larger markets, the financial system, or the basic structure, I will leave all of that and I'll focus specifically in this case on the bond market. If I haven't provided any detailed background to the bond market itself, I'll provide some more information. I'll have a nice maybe half page, couple of paragraphs on the historical development and evolution of the bond market, the euro bond market. And then to do that, again, I need to explain the difference between the loan market, the bond market, and the underlying interbank market. And then if I really want to build in information, you've got the paper on the euro dollar market, which talked about the placement market and all the other background to this, as well as the regulated developments in America, regulation Q and D, which forced the banks to come over to London in the first place. You can also get into things like credit multipliers, credit creation, all that type of stuff. If I haven't used that elsewhere, I'll build it in by way of introduction. I'll keep it short, I'll keep it direct, I'll keep it limited, but I'm going to get lots of extra credit for that. What we're focusing on then is the capital markets and the specific advantages they provide, which are to do with the liquidity and the negotiability, or the transferability and negotiability, which creates liquidity. So I'll explain all of this, and then I'm going to focus on the bond market. So long fixed bonds tend to be for fixed periods. If it's floating, it's not a bond, it's a note. So then I'm going to look at the note market, and I'll explain the difference between the medium-term note market and then go down to the short note market, the euro note market, and then we're going down to less than 1 year commercial paper. And I'll just explain as much information as I can around all of this. It's asking for the documentation, so I've also got to basically explain the procedure that applies. What I'll try to do is, we can go back to the core bond chapter, it's got all of the documents, it's got the issuance procedure, there's like a 12-part procedure I designed, I explained, both for the loan markets and for the bond markets, so I can use that. That tends to apply just for the bonds, which are the long fixed instruments. Something very similar then applies for the notes and the commercial paper. The difference being that when we go down shorter duration, we're going to want to set up a program. So it's not just an initial issuance of bonds. We'll have a program so that the companies themselves can issue the notes after the facility's been set up. So I'll need to explain all of that as well. So I'm going to go through all of this. I'll have all of this pre-planned, all of this prepared, so I'm ready to use all of this in the exam. One specific point that comes up on this is you can have short euro notes. So what's the difference between a short euro note and commercial paper? And we dealt with this in class. Basically, it's to do with the fact that commercial paper will not be underwritten, whereas the euro notes will be. It will take longer to set up, between a day up to 7 days, and 1 day rather than 7 days. And then also you'll have larger minimum denominations, usually 500,000 rather than 100,000. And this is all in the chapter as well. So again, I'm pumping up, building up highly intelligent, articulate answers. Question 4. Large financial institution wishes to restructure its loan portfolio. It is looking to transfer a number of loan obligations in the secondary markets. So this is simple loan transfer. So we've got legal assignment, equitable assignment under the Law of Property Act, 1925, section 146. What are the conditions? Has to be in writing, unconditional amount, with notice.
Because in practice, we don't want to give notice, we'll go for equitable assignment. Equitable assignment is just as effective legally, apart from the fact that we can lose priorities if somebody else gives notice to the debtor first. We can lose our benefits from that. We'll then explain the difference between this and novation. Remember, assignment, you assign benefits. You transfer benefits by assignment. You cannot transfer obligations. If you want to transfer by obligation, it has to be a novation. And then you've also got participation and sub-participation. You've got credit participation is contingent. And then also you can mention the other types of economic means of transferring interest, although legally they're not actually transfers, but you could use trust, securitization, and agency as well, although strictly speaking they're not legal forms of transfer, but they can secure the same economic results. So you just work through all of these. If you still have space, build it back into your loan agreements, build it back into your documentation, include the LMA references. So Schedule 5 is a novation, Schedule 6 is an assignment, but you've also got the transfer provisions inside the LMA as well. Build those in, pump up your answers, that's how you get a very high mark. Question 5, a major international aircraft company operating out of the UK needs to raise funds to purchase a series of 20 new lightweight planes with improved fuel efficiency to assist manage carbon footprint. Total cost is estimated to be $10 billion. It's going to raise it through MTNs, medium-term notes. It's prepared a draft prospectus. There's nevertheless concerns with the number of flight routes, which will impact its profitability. So it's worried about its projections, financial projections. One of its freight-only aircraft also crashed, so there's possible litigation. So you need to look for litigation misrepresentations. You're asked to advise on possible legal implications. Very straightforward. You just go through the outline I gave you on misrepresentation. What are the basic possible areas of liability? Innocent, negligent, fraudulent misrepresentation, statutory misrepresentation under the Misrepresentation Act, as well as fraud under the Theft Act with deceit. You go through each of those. In this particular case, we're looking specifically at financial statements being overly generous, as well as the litigation disclosure. So you immediately think LMA provisions, go back into your loan agreement, find the key clauses, look at the drafting, build that in. Is this going to be an issue? If we have proper disclosure, it won't be a problem. We need to correct the statements. We need to ensure they're validated by the accountants, the auditors. Otherwise, we just delete them. We do not use them because we don't want to create the liability. Build in as much information as you can. Build in as much case law as you can. Expand your answers as far as you can. Last question. Outline the use and importance of standard documentation in financial markets. We dealt with this in the first set of slides. Because these markets are so large, we should normally immediately consider some form of international treaty or convention. That, however, is very unattractive, and I've provided a whole list of points on the slides to explain why that is the case. Therefore, we will go for a market self-regulatory model, and I've outlined all of the arguments for and against this on the next slide. And then we can build around on top of that all of the conditions which apply with regards to the different tools, arguments for and against, as well as the nature of the markets which makes this suitable for use in this wholesale area. As we said before, in terms of the use of standard documents and trade associations, it's clear, consistent, complete, certain, correction, convertible, consensus, compliant, full cover, convergence over time. It's compatible because it reflects market practice and it allows maximum degree of control, as well as the nature of the markets themselves, compact size, large transaction size, high level of concentration, professional and wholesale nature of the parties involved, use of legal advice, self-interest, voluntary adoption and compliance, profit incentive, cross-border and global nature, as well as official oversight, some possible residual sanction, and then central bank oversight and control. We build all of this in. We explain that these markets cannot be dealt with on an external, formal, regulatory basis. Therefore, we have to use an internal market regulatory model. We explain the nature of this and then how it's appropriate in this particular market. And that allows us to do a very good answer to the specific question. And then we just ensure that we have pumped up and built up our full 4,500 words.